Okay.
But that was...
How loud is it? Okay, we'll call the meeting to order at 5:34. Okay, so roll call, please.
Director Shore?
Present.
Director Zindo?
Here.
Director Correzio?
Here.
Director Rogers?
Here.
Director Matthews?
Here.
Vice President Borjan?
Here.
President DeLara?
Here. And we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I've asked the Vice President Borja to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, I will entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
First and a second, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Abstentions? Okay. Moving on, we have public comment. Do we have any public comments? None? Going once, going twice? Okay, move on. To the consent agenda, do we have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
There is a correction to something in the minutes.
There's a correction, okay. What is the correction?
The correction is that when we were making nominations for vice president last time, somebody nominated me and I declined, and then the nomination stopped and there was a unanimous vote for Director Borja. And that's not what was written, so that's what happened.
Okay, so we could make note of that change. Are there any other changes or anyone want to pull any of the items on the consent calendar?
I have a question about page 33, our check register. It says that we paid the Desert Sun, is it page 33? $10,550. I just would like to know what it was for.
Okay, we did cover that during our committee meeting, and I will ask our CEO to remind us what that is about.
Those expenses are related to advertising and especially to let the community know that we were doing the rezoning of our district.
Perfect. Thank you. That's it.
That was very, it caught our attention as well. So thank you very much. So if there are no other changes, then I will accept the motion to approve the consent.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Any abstentions? None? We will move on to the next item on the agenda is appointment of committees. Okay, so we have that item.
There's no document attached.
There's no document, okay. So do we have the list or...
I'm sorry, you're going to make the appointments, and then it was my understanding that I was going to pass out the actual appointments once they
made. Okay, that's fine. So there are some changes that we'll be making from last year's assignments. I think the notable items is that I will be joining the Strategic Planning Committee, and Vice President Borja will be joining the Program Committee. And the program committee will be chaired by board member Yvette. And we have, who else, no other changes?
We have a new committee.
The ad hoc committee,
yeah.
Oh, here it is, I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you for bringing this up. So no changes to the finance.
These were the changes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. Very good. Okay, now we're gonna have to rely on my memory. Okay, so we have no changes to the finance. It will continue to be chaired by Mark Matthews, and myself and Arthur Shore, board members, will be part of that committee. We have the program committee that is going to be chaired by Yvette Perez Gill, and it will include board member Carol Rogers and Karen Borja, Vice President Borja. And we have the hospital lease oversight committee will be chaired by board member Zendel. And will be participating members will be board members Rogers and Shore, Arthur Shore, And the Strategic Planning Committee will be chaired by Board Member Zendel. And it will be, participants will be Arthur Shore and myself. And then we have another standing committee, the Board Staff Communications and Policies Ad Hoc Committee. I will be chairing that committee, and the participating board members will be Board Member Zendel and Perez Gill. We will be dissolving the Behavioral Health Ad Hoc Committee. The Tenant Lease Ad Hoc Committee will continue to be chaired by Mark Matthews, and participants will be Vice President Borja and Board Member Shore. And then we will have the CVAG Homelessness Committee that will continue to be represented at the district by Board Member Rogers. And the Desert Regional Medical Center Governing Board will be represented by Board Member Zendel and Rogers on that committee. So those are the changes. We're all good? Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So
I will. Policy committee, is that a different one?
We just changed it from it being an ad hoc committee to a standing committee. And that is the communications and policies. It will now be a standing committee.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, so I will entertain a motion to accept the appointment of committees.
So moved.
Is there a second?
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Are there any noes? Any abstentions? Okay, none. We will move on to the next item. Okay, we have the Desert Healthcare District CEO report, an informational item. I will turn it over to our CEO.
I have three items that I would like to report. First one is the municipal services review by LAFCO. We have received the questionnaire, which we must complete and return by February 11. By February 10, we will be meeting with Gary Thompson, who's the new chief executive at LAFCO, and make sure that the responses that we're submitting are sufficient. The questionnaire includes questions about internal operations, staff performance evaluation, district performance, voter participation, community engagement, and participation in regional plans for the future, etc.
Conrado, could you move your mic a little closer?
Okay. Is this better?
No.
I don't think it's on. Maybe it's not on. It's definitely on.
It is on.
Okay.
Can you hear me better?
Pull it close.
Better here?
Let me do this.
That's good.
Thank you.
I also want to share with you that we have received financial support from different organizations toward the community health needs assessment. And I want to thank Desert Care Network, which is here in the audience, Borrego Health Foundation, which is also here, and the California Endowment. This is significant because it means that the plans and the work that we are doing at the district represent the interests of the collective and not just the interests of the district. Regarding the California Endowment, I participated in a phone call this week in which the endowment was providing an update on what has happened after the completion of the first 10 years of the Building Healthy Communities Initiative. There are still many things that are up in the air that they haven't determined what the next steps will be. They haven't announced which grantees will no longer going to receive funds from them. But the good news is that the evaluation overall of the work of the Building Healthy Community has been a positive one, and that in fact they want to expand the number of communities that are participating in Building Healthy Communities. They haven't announced the final number, but at least it's going to be next to doubling the number of communities. They acknowledge that they do not have a clear strategy. However, the goal is to expand it, and the idea that they're promoting is the people power to affect policies, to change communities, and to create systems that are reflective of the needs of the people. They announced that they're planning to implement as a funding strategy more of core operation support to our organizations that are advancing the agenda of people power. They also said that there will be more program-related investments and mission-related investments in the future, and that there will be opportunities to collaborate with local organizations, which is one of the opportunities that we believe might be in the future for Desert Healthcare District and Foundation. I am trying to get a meeting with Dr. Ross so that we can discuss what his vision is and how we may fit in that, and also to share with him what we're trying to accomplish with our community-driven community health needs assessment. Finally, the last thing I want...
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Can I ask a question now, or do you want me to wait till
yes,
the end?
Please.
Okay, on this topic, when you talk about expanding, are they talking regionally or just...
Regionally, okay. Yes. They want to double the number of communities that are participating in the building healthy communities from 14 to close to 28.
So right now, the area that they're serving is the eastern Coachella Valley. So is there a possibility that that would include the whole Coachella Valley?
That is my question to Dr. Ross, and that's why I'm trying to meet with him.
Okay.
One of the strategies that they had in building healthy communities was to expand the Desert Healthcare District to cover Eastern Coachella Valley. So I think it will be appropriate to have a conversation of building healthy community in the context of covering the entire district.
Thank you.
The last point I wanted to highlight is that Assembly Bill 890, which was introduced by Assemblymember Wood, is advancing. That bill is related to the scope of practice of nurse practitioners, and that would allow nurse practitioners to have an unsupervised practice. The bill passed with amendments out of the Assembly Appropriations Committee and is now heading to the Assembly floor and must pass before January 31st. So we will hear by the end of this week whether that bill is passing. CHD is mobilizing all the districts to provide letters of support. We have already provided letters of support to this bill in the past, so we will know by the end of this week what happens with that.
I'm sorry, what did you just say? As a district, we provided a letter of support?
Yes.
Did we discuss that?
I believe so. It was in May. It was before my time.
Yeah, we approved it.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't remember.
Carol knows.
Good morning.
Do you have more to report?
That's all. Thank
okay.
you.
Are there any other board members that have any questions or comments on what our CEO reported? Okay, then we will move on to the next item, the Desert Regional Medical Center CEO report.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Fine, how are you?
We've started the 2020 year on a run. The flu season has really picked up speed. In the first couple of weeks of January, we actually saw more flu-related emergency room visits and inpatient admissions than we saw on all of January of the 2019 year. So we did spend some time taking a look at our bed demand and our patient level of care matching, and we made a couple adjustments within the facility in order to be able to better accommodate those individuals that are coming in the building. With the declining birth rates we're seeing in the valley, we did merge our OB onto its original unit. We then took the area that we were overflowing postpartum, which is a licensed med-surg unit, and we opened up 32 more med-surg beds.
Wow.
In addition to that, that then allowed us to take one of our med-surg units and add some additional tele capability telemetry monitoring, and so we've added some flex up of 18 additional tally beds. I will tell you that the ER is running about 8% higher volumes than they ran the prior year. That's a bit of a challenge for us because we are still under construction and it's our waiting area and our ability to provide a quiet and private environment that we're having to work with. That work is scheduled to be completed by March, and that's usually our second big move. I do want you to know that we are monitoring the coronavirus very actively, participating in daily calls. We are following the public health and the CDPH screening and care requirements. As a course of normal action, we interview people when they come to the emergency room or when they're admitted on their travel, with specific emphasis on international travel. And so that's obviously an area where we're staying very focused. I think you all know that there's been 5 confirmed cases, and we have 2 of them in locally here. There's a case in Orange County, a case in LA, one in Arizona, Illinois, Washington. I'm not sure I count 5 or not, but so we're staying on top of that. Stay on top of that activity and making sure that we are following the guidelines that are presented. All I can say is wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. That will assist greatly in just the flu and with the coronavirus. A couple of other things that are going on. In the month of December, we made about $1 million worth of investment in some additional capital equipment. Most of that capital equipment items were in the operating room. OR tables, instrumentation, the money goes pretty quickly. So we've made some surgeons quite happy with some new orthopedic equipment, neuro equipment, and general surgery.
In addition, we have a couple of
new services that we onboarded. We did our first case today, which I'm going to get the name wrong, so I'm going to look. It's called the Savvy Scout Wireless Localization. Women who have breast cancer or men that have breast cancer, when you're having surgery, there's usually a wire that's inserted to localize the site, the cancer site. This is actually a wireless localization. It's an implant of a seed that allows for better monitoring on the actual location that you either want to have a surgical intervention. So we did our first case today. The other new technology that we brought on board is a cryoablation, and that's done in the EP lab. We've done the EP studies where you actually burn off nerves and elements that are misfiring. This actually freezes those misfiring nerves, and this is just, it's less invasive and an easier recovery on the patient.
Yeah, I suspect that's true.
Done through cryoablation.
Oh, I've got 3 of them.
Also, kind of continuing on that vein, we did vacate the pediatric unit for 3 days to refurbish the HVAC system. That was completed in the 3 days that it was planned, and the unit was reoccupied. And from a community standpoint, we did host 3 events on stroke, heart care, and a couple of blood drives. And we did participate in about 6 other community events to keep the support out in the community present. And that's it for me.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from any board members or any comments?
I have a thank you for Desert Regional Medical Center for supplying flu vaccines for the homeless. We had a minor setback. We didn't realize the syringes didn't come with needles, minor detail. But we figured that out, and we're giving more tomorrow.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
It's good to vaccinate. Mm-hmm. Okay. Vaccinated. Yes. Shamelessly promoting vaccinations and hand washing.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is the Desert Regional Medical Center Governing Board of Directors report. It's an informational item from our board member, Les Zendel, and Director Carol.
I'm going to give the report. It's very brief. Michelle went through most of the main items. A few things that I wanted to highlight and add is we welcomed 2 new members of the governing board. Chairman Jeff Groovy of the Aquacaliente Band of Cahuilla Indians, And then Dr. Eric Presser, who's a pulmonary surgeon, thoracic surgeon, who specializes in non-invasive access. And then other things in her CEO report, besides what she just mentioned, she reported on a visit from the tenant CMO, chief medical officer of the whole organization. And I had gotten to meet him, actually, was a couple days before. Very, very impressive guy, trained at Barnes in St. Louis. I think he's a surgeon. And he really talked about quality improvement. And his whole idea about driving improvements in quality focuses on resources and processes. And so often, you know, you wonder, are we spending enough resources? Well, you can spend all the resources in the world, but if you don't look at the processes, the systemic way you're doing things, you're not going to fix it. And of course, you can be doing all the system review you want, and if you don't have the resources, you can't drive quality. So I was very impressed with that. Michelle mentioned the flu stuff. Just as an aside, I know now three people in the last 2 weeks that have developed documented influenza A who had the vaccine. So we often see that the vaccine isn't perfect, but it does appear that there is a breakthrough, and it's influenza A. And so if you have had the vaccine and you develop symptoms, you should go to your doctor right away and get some Tamiflu if it's within 48 hours at the max. If it's more than 48 hours, it's not going to do any good anyway. Michelle also reported something interesting in that there's a net increase in RNs at Desert Regional of 47 new RNs in 2019 over 2018. And that's a significant increase in staffing. We had a long presentation on the quality reports that go to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services and LeapFrog, and how Desert scores and where the scores come from and how it compares. And very similar to what we had at the hospital oversight meeting a month or two ago. And then finally, we did the usual credentials review and peer review, which happens to every physician every 2 years at a minimum, and sometimes more often than that. That's the end of the report.
Very good. Are there any questions or comments on that report? Yes.
I would just like to acknowledge that the Desert Regional Medical Center Governing Board also accepted the membership on the new board of Thomas Smith. And before he was allowed to sit on the committee, he passed away. So there's a celebration of life for him on Friday. So that's unfortunate and big shoes to fill.
Thank you, Carol. Okay, the next item on the agenda is our audit report. Do we have the auditor here? Not yet? Okay. So he's been held up in traffic, and hopefully he'll arrive before the meeting is over. So we'll move on and come back to him when he's here. To item K, the Finance, Legal, Administration, and Real Estate Committee, and I will turn it over to the chair of that committee, Mark Matthews.
Mostly the minutes are attached. We're planning with the chief administrative officer and the financial team to start putting together a budget for next year.
Are there any?
Is there anything we need to highlight other than, yeah, it was a rather rapid meeting because we're way ahead of budget. We're on track, doing a good job, and so that makes it easier.
And I think we also made a comment about what a great team we have and the great job that Chris is doing.
So. Yes.
Okay, any other questions or comments for our board member? No? Moving on, we have the program committee, and we have Carol, the chair of that committee, to report.
Thank you. The program committee met, and we received progress reports from Jocelyn Senior Center, Galilee Center, Ronald McDonald House Charities, Martha's Village and Kitchen, Voices for Children, Safe House of the Desert. All of which those grants are on track. We received final reports from Jocelyn Senior Center, Coachella Valley Parks and Recreation Foundation, Grassroots Junior Tennis, Mizell Senior Center. Those are letters of interest. And a letter of interest from Public Health Institute, El Sol Neighborhood, Fine Food Bank, Loma Linda University Children's Hospital, and Eastern Coachella Valley Funding Opportunity grants that we received that we will review tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions or comments of Carol or board member Rogers? Yes.
To Carol and our staff, and also some of our grantees, actually. Kudos to the Galilee Center. It seems like $75,000 is going like a very, very long way. It's incredibly impressive to see how much they're doing. I just have a question on their report. They talk about many different aspects. Are they just counting the funding from the district or any other kind of funding that they get?
This is respective to the funding from the district, and it's within a certain time period.
It's incredible. Page 120, for those of you that are following along.
Made that go a long way.
In page 122, people are talking about like the district boundaries. That particular grantee is talking about district boundaries. What do they mean? Do they mean all of the Coachella Valley or Cook Street over?
We're still within the boundaries of the original boundaries of Cook Street, serving district residents original district residents that receive services at that point.
Thank you for the clarification. I have another question. Martha's Village and Kitchen shared that of the clients who exceeded 89% of the clients that they served, 89% were placed into permanent housing. Do we know what kind of housing that is?
I don't, but I can find out.
Okay. I'm also interested to see like housing provided by who. That's like an exceptional metric. It's incredibly, kudos, right? Like it's very just inspiring, right? Of everything
they
that they do.
Six clients that came into that period, so.
Yeah, and 89 of them were housed, so it was incredibly impressive. That's the word I'm looking for. I would also be interested in knowing how they measure that outcome. Is it just people who are given vouchers or people who are, like, what does it mean to house someone? Just curious about the rest of our work and how we move forward with our initiatives.
We can do a site visit.
That'd be probably a good idea, too.
Yeah. Site visit.
There is going to be an African event here.
What day?
The 5th of February.
There we go.
I have a question about our Safe House funding. Are we done funding them? Is this like the end of their grant?
This is their final progress report. We're just waiting for their final report.
All right. I really appreciated the hard work they put behind their grant. Like, man, just the support they're giving to people in our community and not just young people, I was genuinely very, very happy that we supported them in their work. Also, good job to the Jocelyn Center for doubling their unduplicated services. Very impressed there, too. My last question is, of new grants that are coming in, letters of intent. We have a total of $1.72 million of requests. I'm just wondering, did we do a really good job in like promoting our grant services? Is this just people who happen to know us and like are good friends of the district and know about our grant?
I think it's a combination of everything. They know we have funding. We have a robust grant program. The board every fiscal year allocates at least $3.5 million in grants on the district side. These are also organizations that we have funded in the past.
I was going to ask about how much you have left after the sea bag.
No. But you're not going to.
Be nice. Be nice.
I'd say about half.
That's it. Thank you all very much. It was genuinely really impressive to read this report. And our program committee as well. Thank you all for your hard work.
Thank you. I think you'll enjoy the program committee. Okay, moving on to the next item is the Hospital Lease Oversight Committee. And I'll ask Chair Zendel to report on that.
Yeah, the minutes are attached, and we did our usual review of the previous quarter's inspection. In addition, we had a very long presentation on the Leapfrog Hospital Safety grade to understand it better. And then there's some information about that in the minutes.
Okay. Do we have any questions or comments?
Carol, did you want to add anything?
Board members?
Carol or Karen?
No.
No? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to the next item, we have a strategic planning committee. Again, chair of the committee is Board Member Zendel.
Oh, wow. Why are you picking on me?
Very popular.
Okay, the minutes are there, and during that meeting, let me get to the page. We reviewed something that's going to be coming to the board for approval, which is the service agreement to do the community needs assessment, and you'll hear about that later, and it was recommended for approval, and you'll hear about that later.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
Oh, is it now? Is it an action item now?
Yes,
oh,
okay. It's actually
going next. Next item.
I do want to make a comment on the strategic planning. That came up in one of our workshops, a topic about strategic planning, how that's a process that we want to start looking into and start figuring out how we want this to play out. So I'm really excited about being part of that committee, and part of that is to learn more. And we're planning on doing some more workshops throughout the year. At least four is what we plan on tentatively scheduling, and we'll see if it works out. But we do feel the need to get better informed, and I think having additional time in a workshop setting would be very helpful. So that will be very informative for planning our strategic plan. So that was good information. Okay, the next item is a consideration to approve the selection of the Health Assessment and Research for Communities, the HARC, as the contractor to implement all phases of the Community Health Needs Assessment and Community Health Improvement Plan, not to exceed $300,000. Turn it over to
you. And I would ask Conrado, as he's presenting it, to sort of put it in the context of how it fits into the strategic plan.
Creating a long-term vision for the district requires understanding what are the needs of our communities and identifying what are going to be the tasks that we can embark on to improve the health outcomes and make a vibrant Coachella Valley. Once we have those elements, I believe we will have the information we need to drive the strategies of the district, looking outside what the needs are in our communities and looking inwardly to understand what's the capacity of the district, how we can build and strengthen the capacity of the district, and which are the partners that we will need to address the significant needs that we will be facing over the next few years. To get to that point, it's important that we have an in-depth analysis or assessment of what the needs are, and we have chosen the methodology of making this a community-driven, community engagement assessment of the health needs in Coachella Valley. And as we advance in identifying those needs, we will be working on developing health improvement plan. On the background on this is that on October 28th, the request for proposals approved by the board was released. In November, the board approved to have external reviewers that could assess with the lens of significant expertise and experience in developing community health needs assessment the proposals that we were anticipating we were going to receive.
We conducted an extensive outreach and we received 8 proposals from organizations throughout the United States. The staff and external reviewers created the review process, and we have those review tools that were utilized to assess the proposals are on page 219, and you will see the results of those reviews with no names of who the reviewers were on page 223. As you will notice, HARC received the highest score, and that's why the recommendation that we have before you to approve this service agreement for HARC to conduct, help conduct the community health needs assessment and develop a self-improvement plan for the district.
Do we have any questions from the board? Any comments?
When do you anticipate starting?
Tomorrow.
Thank you.
We have a meeting at 8:30.
When do you expect the first preliminary report?
We are working on the timeline.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to ask Vice President Borja, what did you think of the process?
For the overall? Mm-hmm.
Grab the mic.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. And I'm going to ask you as well. What you thought of the process? What did you think of the process?
Of selecting the committee?
Well, the whole process. This was covered during that committee, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just curious.
Okay. So I was glad we had hired the independent reviewers. It gives someone from the outside a look, and they're able to really take into consideration what the district is asking for. So I appreciate the hard work on that end. I am okay. I think HARC has done a very good job identifying the different actors, people identifying who needs to be bought in from the beginning on something like this needs assessment so they can continue to participate all the way towards the end of this. One of my comments at the committee meeting was that we, at some point, this needs to become, some of these some of the information and the data points that are identified need to become policy, and so it's really important to also take into consideration who it is that will be creating policy, whether it's funding policy, healthcare policy, people outside of the district. We may come back and HARC may give us a data set of 72 different items. We may only be able to accomplish 5 of them in one particular year. So I appreciate that there's different actors going into this. I definitely appreciate and give a big thank you to the Desert Care Network, the California Endowment, and Borrego Health for throwing down and saying, yeah, we also believe in what you're trying to do, and we're gonna be some of those actors from the start to the end and beyond. So I am okay with the process.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments, because you, the two of you, were very much more involved in this than we were, so I just was curious, but I'll turn it over to you about what your thoughts on the process.
Yeah, I thought the process was good. I'll repeat one of the concerns I had at the meeting, and that's that we have to, we want to get things that we can objectively measure, and that's very hard. And we also want to be measuring things that we know make a difference. So it turns out that we only have data that shows that a few things make a difference, like not smoking and other things, treatment of certain conditions and things like that. Yet we also want to look at social determinants of health, which are not so, one, easily measured, or two, easily tracked for improvement. And so I just wanted to keep that in mind, because I think that's it's not an ideal way of measuring, but we're going to have to deal with process measures until we have better outcome measures, and that was all. But the process was good, and I know that we had a lot of interest, organizations that wanted to help us, and that's good. And I think it was a very thorough process, looking and picking the best person or group.
Thank you. Oh, do you want to say something?
I just want to comment on the fine work. I was concerned with this year, you know, because, you know, we bid it out to, what, 8 players or something like that. And it is comforting to know that after all these years, Dr. LeCompte, you came out on top. And that's terrific. Congratulations for that.
I also appreciate that it was an objective. I think we're the best. But it's nice.
No, I at the beginning of this process, I would have guessed that one of those people from LA would have done better. But congratulations, nice job.
I have an awesome team, and we're going to do a great job in partnership with your team.
Thank you, Jenna. Appreciate it. Good job on the process. Okay, so we have an action item. Is there a motion to? Oh, I'm sorry. Is there public comments? Okay. Is there any public comments on this item? Hearing none, I will then entertain a motion to approve or not approve.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Second.
All those in favor?
No, we have to have a roll call.
Oh, okay.
Money.
Sorry. That's money. Okay.
Director Shore.
Yes.
Director Zindel.
Yes.
Director Perez Gill.
Yes.
Director Rogers.
Yes.
Director Matthews.
Yes.
Vice President Borja.
I used to sit on the board of HARC, so just putting that out there, I'm no longer on that board for full disclosure, but I vote yes.
Okay, and President Jalal.
Yes. Okay, so it passes unanimously. Okay, so moving on to the next item of. Old business. Do we have any old business at this time? Okay. No comments from the board? Okay. Then the new business. Do we have any business, any announcements that any board member would like to make?
That's at the end, but first we have, there's a legal comment.
Oh, okay. We have new businesses, M. Is that the, yeah. So there's no new business?
No.
Oh, okay. So that doesn't include announcements. Okay. Okay, so next we have legal comments.
Oh, I thought you were going to miss me.
No, we wouldn't miss you.
So this is where the legislature's back in full swing. This is the second year of the two-year session. And not surprisingly, Governor Newsom is having some ambitious agendas. And I think a good way to look at that is just to look at the governor's proposed budget. This year, the fiscal year will include more than $222 billion in spending, which is roughly 3% more than last year. And it includes a surplus of approximately $5.6 billion, $2 billion of which is to go into our rainy day fund, which is going to move it to about $21 billion.
That's great.
And although the budget continues to be strong, or the economy, there are concerns that we may reach a recession at some point. Homelessness is a major factor focus for the governor. He's proposing an additional $1 billion in funds to house many unsheltered individuals. And he's launching the California Access to Housing and Service Fund with an initial $750 million investment. A part of the discussion around the budget, big part, was healthcare. And the need to control healthcare costs. So what he's looking at is try to look at improve the Medi-Cal program to address not only medical needs of the enrollees, but also social determinants. And his belief is treating the whole person. And this is kind of a new approach that will be part of the Medicaid waiver application process that's coming up this year. And then he envisions a Medi-Cal program providing other services such as housing transition, sustaining services, recuperative services, home and community-based wrapped-around services, and other non-clinical services. So that's pretty much consistent with, frankly, what the district's been investing in the last year. Also, he's trying to control costs
and try to have a seamless system by reducing the complexity and increasing flexibility for single market drug pricing within the state. He didn't mention single payer by name, but he did discuss the idea of universal coverage. And he has proposed expanding Medi-Cal to cover undocumented low-income adults 65 and older. So his other aspects are the vaping tax on cigarette products, a ban on flavored cigarette products, and the establishment of a behavioral task force. That would bring together relevant state department, counties, and others to review the existing programs and policies. And I think that's pretty much it. The rest of it's in the report that I provided. Yes, sir.
Do you have any sense of his seriousness about the Salton Sea agenda?
You know, I haven't heard anything on that.
There was something in the paper, but
yeah.
So I wondered if there was any substance to it.
Yeah. No, I'm not aware of it. Go ahead.
Jeff, his proposal to expand Medi-Cal provision onto issues that are social determinants of health, that would require approval by the federal government, correct?
That's correct. That's correct, but it's in the application. He thinks it's really important, and I think it's consistent with the philosophy
absolutely.
Coming forward. So
but
we'll see where it goes.
It's unlikely to be approved by this administration.
Well, we'll see how long you're in. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Do we have any questions or comments from any of the other directors? No? Okay.
On his report?
On his report only, yes. Okay, so if none, then we will actually go back now to our auditor. He has joined us. Okay, so we will turn it over to him. Or to Chris, do you want to introduce him?
You can stand the podium if you like, Craig.
That's
fine. This is Craig Hartstein. He's with the audit firm, Haas Levy Hartstein. They have been our audit firm for the past six audit years. And at the October board meeting, the audit reports were presented to the board and were accepted. And but there was a request from the board for one of the audit staff or persons to come out, be available to the board, give just a slight overview, answer any questions that the board may have regarding the audit reports.
Thank you.
Good evening, board.
Hello.
Nice to be out here, even though it took me 4 hours to get here. A lot of thinking to do in the car. Thank you, Chris. As Chris said, my name is Craig Hartson. I've been the engagement partner on the audit for 6 years. And I just wanted to come out here to talk to you a little bit about the audit. As Chris said, back in October, on October 11th, I met with the Finance Committee and went through the audit reports and the management letter somewhat in detail with them, whatever they wanted to do. I usually don't go line by line or page by page with anybody unless they want me to. I have had certain auditees want me to sit down with them for hours and go through, which that would have to be at a different time. I don't think you have time tonight on your agenda to do that. But I just want to go over to let you know what an audit is, what we do. We come out for about 3 to 4 days in May with 3 to 4 people, and about the same amount of time in August. And we go through, it's just not proving out your numbers, making sure the numbers are right. What we also need to do under government auditing standards is make sure you're in compliance with all laws and regulations, contracts, and grants. So that's part of what we do. California has a government code that the district has to abide by. So we make sure that you're doing that through the board, usually a lot of direction by the board, in compliance with laws and regulations as far as you're getting property taxes, you're getting grants, you're getting government money. So we want to make sure that you're following protocol as far as internal controls, accounting, and following all the laws and regs. The other thing we do is, as I just mentioned, internal control. We'll go through and we'll look and make sure that there's proper controls to make sure we can rely on the way the books and records are handled within the district. It's the one finding or the one issue we always have with a district this size is there's not enough people to properly segregate duties. So we look at upon you as the board to make sure that you're overseeing what the district staff is doing. And in doing that, we see that every time there's a warrant register run, someone on the board reviews it and approves it and looks to make sure that everything makes sense. And if they question anything, they can pull it and talk to staff. And that's the one thing we've had over 6 years every year. And there's a thing called cost. There's a cost outweighing the benefits. And to be more beneficial to the district and internal control, make sure there's enough people to segregate all the duties, you'd probably have to hire 2 to 3 more people to make us happy. So in lieu of that, to mitigate that, we make sure that the board's reviewing everything, signing off on everything, and they're involved, not in the day-to-day business, but from oversight. And that's the only finding, I think, or the only observation we've had in 6 years. So it's a pretty well-run district with the oversight of the board and the staff that you have. And so that makes us happy and probably makes you happy. We've issued 3 reports, one for the district, one for the foundation, and one for the retirement plan. All 3 reports were what we call unmodified reports, meaning we found nothing to lead us to believe that all the numbers and disclosures were incorrect. So that's what you strive for also. So after that, if there's any questions that anybody might have.
Do we have any questions from any directors? Yes.
I know in the past we've had some concern about the retirement investment plan and whether it is functional and self-sustaining. Was this addressed in the report?
Well, we don't make that determination. We make sure that all the numbers are accurate and are being paid to the retirees correctly. If there's odd investments, I mean, you go to your investment advisor, and I can't remember U.S. Bank or... U.S. Bank, they're the ones that advise you on the investments. We didn't see anything that was out of line within the investments that would concern us, like some junk bonds or anything like that. They were all pretty highly rated. If you look at the investment audit report, I believe we list out all the types of investments and what they're rated, you know, AAA, AAA, or not rated in the case of common stocks. You have a, I remember right, small investments in common stocks, but you have an investment advisor that's doing that for you. So if we had any issue with it, you know, we'd take it up saying, hey, get another investment advisor. We know this guy, we don't like what he does, or you've got really risky investments. I don't see any issues with the investments at this time.
I think if I may, what Director Rogers is referring to is on the retirement accounts, is it appropriately funded in terms of you know, sometimes they're underfunded for pensions and things like that. And I believe the Finance Committee has looked at that and over the years made recommendations for funding. I don't know if you as an auditor get involved in that, but perhaps the Treasurer could comment on that.
You want to go first, Craig?
I don't necessarily get involved with telling you what to do and what not to do. Obviously, there is an unfunded portion of the pension plan. Yeah. And I can't remember. I think the total liability is about $7 or $8 million.
It's down to 3 now.
Down to 3.
3. Okay. So what this is for those of you in the audience, this is the pension plan for former hospital employees a long time ago, and so when the hospital was leased, their pension plan stopped, and they went to a different one. So we're talking 20-some years ago. Over the years, there was quite a shortfall. And if you look at page 83, and I'll just give you the numbers, the liability in 2015 was $7.7 million. The district over the years has done a couple of things, including put some cash in there. I, at one time, when the district was expanding, went, now we've got the rest of the valley that wants some money, and I think we need to have a fiduciary duty to take care of our former employees. So we transferred some money in. And the current liability is $3.3 million. So it's much better than it was. Now and it's all driven by how long everybody lives. I mean, it really, it's a table. And so we're pretty much out of the woods and headed in the right direction. And I hope our employees stay healthy. And these are people that, what's shocking is how many haven't left. I mean, is it like still 106, 147 employees from 30 years ago, some high number? And they weren't leaving forever. So we lost about, 80 of them, meaning they retired. They didn't die, they retired. So particularly nurses and employees at Desert Hospital, once they got there, they never leave, which is great. That brings experience for patients and whatever. But so the financial liability is significantly less, but it's $3.3 million.
And just to be clear, it wouldn't be financially prudent to totally fund it, right? Because it's a waste of money.
No, and these investments are invested by an outside group. And district investments can only be in certain things. This can be a little more, but they take into account the average age of the person, and it's pretty conservative investment. So.
Yeah, I think the plan was frozen in 1997.
Yeah.
And to correct a little bit of what the treasurer said, a lot of it has to do with length of life, and that's if they choose to be paid out in an annuity versus taking a lump sum. So if everybody retired yet tomorrow, and they all want to take a lump sum, the district would have to fund it to pay off everybody's liability.
And to that point, it's an actuarial study that's done, and that's what creates that long life deal, and what Greg's talking about, the annuity of the monthly payments made out over the life of each of the individuals when they retire. But our plan is typically that the retiree will, or when they leave service at the hospital, they will request a lump sum. And so, like Craig's saying, if they all left employment at the hospital today, we have sufficient funds in the investment account to pay everyone today. So there's no shortfall from a present value standpoint. So what you see in the financials is a requirement to show future payments if they were paid out as an annuity versus a lump sum today.
And they wouldn't be paid out for years, which is why you don't need
it
now.
Correct.
We have some questions from Director Borja.
Can you explain the chart on your page 5, our page 49?
This is in the district?
My packet says page 49. Your package says...
49,
oh, sorry, yes, the district. Correct.
Table B?
Yes.
Okay, well, let me just bring you up to date on the financial statements. When we come out, we look at the accounting records, and we help the district prepare the financial statements. The financial statements we help prepare begin on my page 8, which would be 3 pages after yours. What you're looking at is a summary table under management's discussion and analysis, which the district has to prepare. We cannot prepare that. We review it, we tie it into our audited numbers, and we look at it to make sure it's correct as far as auditors go, but we cannot prepare it because it does say management's analysis. So what that is, that table is just a summary of revenue and expenses comparing this year to last year. And it's the management's discussion and analysis is very good for people to look at that don't want to plow through 40 pages of boring disclosures and more detail. It gives them a summary and it tells you what's happened between one year and the next, and actually will give you an economic outlook for the next fiscal year, 19-20. So that should all be in there. It's a condensed synopsis of the financial situation.
Okay. On your page 8, assets, maybe it's not a question for you, but more for our staff. Where did we get $10 million in cash and cash equivalents?
Where are you looking?
First line item, our page 52, Curtis's page 8.
$12 million?
That $12 million, that first line, cash and cash equivalents, there's a $10 million difference, and I'm just curious.
Where did it come from? That goes back a lot of years when I think tenant prepaid the lease.
Well, and some of this is just that with the investments, what's defined as cash and cash equivalents versus like a longer term investment. So I think think what she's asking is between 2018 and 2019, there was 2 million in 2018 and 12 million in 2019. Is that correct?
Correct.
What was invested in longer term versus shorter term investments?
In essence, a reclassification.
Yeah, there may have been investments that matured or were sold in anticipation of paying some expenses, that they had to hold it in current cash in their checking account or a savings account. That's why they're not in the longer term investment category.
So if you want to look at the total assets and deferred outflows to see what the difference between 2018 and 2019.
Yeah, that's the real difference.
I had one more question, and that had to do with capital assets and how they are determined.
How they are determined?
Mm-hmm. We have, what do I see?
Cash flow.
Capital assets. There was a depreciation of in capital assets.
What page are you looking at? I'm sorry.
I'm trying to figure it out.
Page 55.
It's page 26 of the actual audit. I don't know what that is in your packet.
70.
Cash flow page? 55.
No, it's capital assets. Mm-hmm. Some of that
yeah, 70. Page 50.
70?
Yes. On page 50, it says, at June 30th, 2019, the district had $22,348,945 in capital assets. And I was just wondering what that included. Is that real estate that we own?
It includes the Las Palmas Medical Plaza is the larger chunk of that.
And the hospital?
No.
It does include any land that the district owns, any buildings that they own. And this is carried over because your capital threshold policy, anything spent over a specific dollar that has an estimated useful life, I don't recall the exact numbers, but maybe over 2 years, will be capitalized and depreciated mm-hmm. over its estimated useful life. So if the district goes and buys a vehicle for use for $25,000, that'll be capitalized and written off somewhere between 5 and 10 years as depreciation. A lot of this is old assets that you've had on the books for years. And we look at any additions and deletions through the year as part of our audit. We'll comb through expenditures, we'll look at board minutes to see if assets were approved to purchase or disposed of and if they were sold. And we go through that. And then there's specific formulas that are used to depreciate it over a number of years.
We own Desert Regional Medical Center. The real estate, does that show up on our capital asset?
It does not show on our books because the transaction essentially kind of transfers the asset for accounting-related purposes to the books of Desert Regional or TAN.
So they can pay the property tax.
The asset does not reside on our financial statements.
Okay,
I think when the lease occurred between the district and tenant, it was considered a capital lease. This was before my time. But a capital lease is basically saying all the ownership is going to transfer to the lessee under certain accounting rules. And there's specific points that you have to go through to look at the lease and see if it falls into a capital lease or an operating lease. So whoever did the books years ago put it on as a capital lease. We don't go back and audit 20 years ago.
Because it was greater than 5 years at the time.
Yeah, and I guess one of the advantages, and this came up at the time of the lease, but if you transfer the hospital and property to a for-profit, they have to pay taxes on that property. So property taxes were generated in the community through that transfer, whereas if it had been a non-profit, for example, we didn't pay taxes as a public agency before. So that was one of the issues that actually came up. But as Chris has explained, it was all done. This is all from an accounting purpose. From a legal standpoint, they have a leasehold interest in the property and in the improvements, but it's owned by the district from a legal standpoint, not an accounting standpoint.
Very good questions. Are there any more questions from our directors? Carol?
Good, thanks.
Okay, very good. Okay, so thank you very much for making the long trip.
Oh, my pleasure. And
I hope that your return is not as long.
Feel free to have a sandwich.
And a cookie. Thank you very much.
And a cookie.
Okay. So we'll move on to the next item, which is O, directors' comments, reports, informational items, and staff direction and guidance. I will start with my one comment is that I was asked by one of our candidates for office to endorse that person for a political office. And I have known this person for a long, long time, and I think very highly of this person. And I reached out to our attorney to find out if there were any issues with me endorsing that person. And my capacity as chair or president of this board, I was informed that there was no issue with that, but it was common courtesy to inform the rest of my fellow directors of this decision on my part. It's no official endorsement by the board. It's just an individual endorsement. So I just wanted to let you know about that decision on my part. Okay, and that, and I also want to report that I had a lot of fun attending the Black History Awards Gala that we attended this past Saturday. Director Yvette Perez-Gill and also our CEO and his lovely wife joined us, and we had a lot of fun. And we also attended the Joslyn Center, the Jazz and
Wine.
Jazz and Wine event also this past week, and we also enjoyed it, and I think it was good representation of the district at those two events. So thank you very much for the opportunity to and that's it on my part. Any other comments, reports? And in the future, if you choose to share information about events that you've attended or things that you would like to share to the community, this is the time to do that. And this is something that we talked about at our workshop, about sharing about where we've been and things that we've heard and learned. So hearing, yes?
And also it's an area where if you have a topic you'd like discussed, yes, on a future agenda, this would also be the area to be able to discuss that publicly as well.
Yes, so at our workshop, we talked about how we introduce an item for future agenda. And so I think we definitely need to make sure that we mention this with a little bit more attention in the future, because we have to make a determination about how much time staff would need to prepare. And if there is consensus by the board to give that direction to staff. So if you have any items for future agendas, feel free. Okay, then.
Okay. In my last meeting with Gonzalo, with our CEO, which was a couple months ago, I really appreciated the report from the JFK CEO. I believe it was at our December or November meeting. I'm wondering if we can get a similar report from Eisenhower and JFK. We get a CEO report from Desert Regional from Michelle. Just curious if they'd be willing to participate, even if it's something in writing and it's attached to our board, but as part of the district hospitals, as hospitals that serve all of our residents across the Coachella Valley, I'd be very interested to hear or even read a report about what's going on in their hospitals. I'm assuming the flu season is not only attacking the Desert Regional Hospital. It'd be good to hear what's going on at the other.
Thank you, Karen. I believe that we have a very good relationship with TENET, with Desert Care Network, and we might probably get some information about JFK. I'm not sure about Eisenhower. We have very little influence over what they do, but we will try.
Just curious. Thank you.
So before I turn it over, can I? Okay, so the decision was that we would have a consensus by the board on any of the items that are brought forth by directors. So is there consensus by the rest of the board to ask for a report from Eisenhower and JFK?
I have an alternative.
Okay.
What I would suggest is that Conrado, you and the staff, think about how we can be seen as more than just the owner of Desert Regional Hospital, and more as and I think this is what Karen's getting to, more as a resource to the entire community. And what's the best way to do that and to learn, as well as making sure that we get all the data that we need to do a community needs assessment, et cetera, by involving other big players like Eisenhower. I think it requires a little thought about how best to do that, and so I think that would be what we ask the first step to be before we specifically ask an invitation to be sent out. That's what I would suggest.
Agreeable to you?
Whatever is doable at the moment to eventually get us to a point where the community is listening or hearing from their hospitals and what's going on is where I would like to get us to.
Okay, so again, my question is there consensus to move forward in asking for some information from our other two hospitals so that we could have a better understanding of our community needs regards to health?
Okay? I think it's the context that's unclear.
I think you have to let that decision be made by the executive, as opposed to giving us such a narrow focus. Take a slightly broader view and not limited to either a particular institution at this point. Let them come back with some recommendations about strategy and how to perfect what you want to do.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. And that is the direction on this topic. And we have another director.
The district in the past has funded the establishment of a family practice residency program at Desert Regional. And there's rumors and understatements and overstatements, and wondering if we could get some information about the what's going on with that contract.
Do you have a good understanding of the question?
First of all, I think that's a question to be directed to the DRMC CEO. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would be reasonable to ask her to address it next month in her report, because if we're interested in that, and that would be the way to do it.
Is that doable? Is that a good...
As far as funding, I don't know what we have funded, mm-hmm. what the district has funded in terms of the residency programs.
$5 million.
What?
$5 million?
Was that to the school?
$5 million grant, $1 million was returned because they did not go into the internal medicine.
That went to the School of Medicine, though, not to Desert Regional.
Established primary care mm-hmm. practice.
Right. So, because we have both the School of Medicine and Desert Regional Hospital involved here, I think it might be a good idea to look at the history of it and make sure everybody's up to date of what happened, and then see if Conrado, if you and Michelle can give the board a report. How much of that can be public? I'm not sure. So that also needs to be discussed.
Do you have a good, clear direction on that? And do you think that's doable?
I do understand. Okay. I have a clear understanding of what the ask is. I am not certain that we can provide that type of information. It's a conversation I have to have with the DRMC. I believe there are legal issues there that my conflict with the request for a public statement on something so sensitive.
Okay, so is there consensus that we will just direct our CEO to look into this and report back about whether that's something that is doable?
That's appropriate.
Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. That's appropriate.
To explore this further?
Yeah, knowing that we made a $4 million investment, and we'd like to know what the status of it is.
I believe that if the question is about the usage of the $4 million that we as the district granted to UCR School of Medicine, the staff can prepare a report on that. And that is something that is within our scope, and it's something that is within our control.
Does that address your question?
Yeah.
Okay. So I believe there's still consensus with that clarification?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Are there any other items for future agenda? Okay, so hearing none, we will adjourn the district meeting at 6:50, and we will take a 5-minute break and resume with the foundation meeting.
No, thank you.